You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week, the government announced that they would not be making changes to the way we calculate our emissions targets according to the advice of the Climate Change Commission. One change that was rejected was the inclusion of international shipping in aviation emissions. The flying and shipping that is so key to New Zealand's economy through tourism and elsewhere is excluded from our emissions targets despite being a significant chunk of our emissions. This means, however, that in the face of our Paris Agreement commitments, the government has opted to keep working with an incomplete picture of our economy's emissions. I spoke to Professor of Philosophy at the University of Otago, Lisa Ellis, about these emissions and what this rejection means for how we present ourselves as neighbours and a member of the international community. Just to get us started, what did the Climate Change Commission actually recommend about these emissions and why?
Oh, well, the Climate Commission recommended that we include international aviation and shipping in our 2050 net zero targets, and they had good reasons for doing that. They noted that international aviation emissions amount to about 9% of all our domestic emissions. So because we are such a remote country, so dependent on international aviation, we have a large sort of effect on the world through our international travel and international shipping. And it's important for us to do our fair share by accounting for that. They also noticed that other countries are moving in that direction. The global direction of travel is to include international aviation and shipping in the 2050 net zero targets. The European Union is doing that for their 2030 targets. The UK is set to legislate that in 2026. And so this puts us out of step with our major trading partners. It's also simply part of the process for aligning ourselves with our Paris goals. And the Commission noted that we have new scientific information about what's compatible with maintaining a rise in global mean surface temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius and not higher. That turns out to be more challenging globally than we thought back in 2015. And so we need to be more ambitious. All of us together need to be more ambitious than we were in 2015. And that's how the Paris Agreement works. So the Climate Commission said it would be a good idea for us to be more ambitious than we were originally, to include net negative carbon emissions, to make up for things like our high international aviation emissions and our high methane emissions. And that would put us on target to be a country that has emissions that are compatible with a not disastrous world.
And when looking, especially in the context of, as you said, our economy is very reliant on these emissions based on where we are in the world, and thinking about these Paris our Paris Agreement commitments, why is it really important that we get a handle on these emissions specifically?
Well, I think there are several different ways to think about it, and they all point in the same direction. So if we were simply interested in supporting our international agricultural exports, our other exports, and our tourism industry, then we would want to be able to assure our customers and our trading partners that when they spend money in Aotearoa, New Zealand, they're not supporting the destruction of the earth. And the Paris Agreement makes it possible for us to make those sorts of guarantees, because if we have net zero targets and we've accounted for our disproportionate aviation emissions by doing other things, maybe we've gone even further than we've already gone in hydropower, and we've got a greater reliance on renewables than we had in the past. Or maybe we've committed to net negative emissions, combining reducing our reducible emissions as much as possible, and then adding sequestration of carbon using multiple modes, you know, not just forestry, but other modes of carbon sequestration, then our customers and our trading partners could be confident that economic interaction with Aotearoa New Zealand isn't something that destroys everybody's collective future. It makes us a better trading partner. So just from a purely economic, selfish position, I think the Climate Commission's advice was quite good. You know, and they said it was compatible with economic growth and would have less than 0.2% effect on independently on our economic growth, and the co-benefits would likely make up for that. But then there are other reasons that we ought to conform to our Paris Accord commitments, and those are that we want to be good neighbors and good ancestors. So if we think everybody else should make efforts to make sure that global emissions stay under the, basically there's a carbon budget cap, and if we emit more than the budget, we will expose ourselves to increasingly frequent and extreme climate harm. So there's a limited budget that we can emit, and if we emit more than our share, we're being unfair to all of our international neighbors, especially to our Pacific neighbors who are disproportionately vulnerable, and we're also being bad ancestors because we're transferring the burden of climate adaptation onto our children and grandchildren.
And so with all of that in mind, why have the government rejected this recommendation?
Well, you'd have to ask them. I really am mystified because the climate minister has repeatedly said that the government is committed to our Paris targets and to our targets under the Zero Carbon Act, the Amendment Act of 2019, which was, of course, a cross-party agreement that included a lot of negotiated compromise so that it was supposed to represent pretty much everybody in the country. And we've heard from this government repeatedly that they're committed to that, but their actions are in exactly the opposite direction. And frankly, it's very hard for people like me to understand how their commitments and their actions could be, you know, so far apart.
So then, looking at this kind of rejection, both in the context of our unique economy and what is becoming a history with the refusal of net negative targets, with the refusal of limiting methane emissions, and just general lack of commitment to a lot of these Paris Agreement commitments, what does this say about the wider ethos of our government when it comes to climate change and our environment?
I really worry that it reflects on all of us collectively. When our international trading partners look at our recent bad behavior, they're not going to blame it on a specific government. They're going to think Aotearoa New Zealand is no longer a member of the coalition of high ambition. Aotearoa New Zealand is no longer a place I can safely invest my money. Aotearoa New Zealand is no longer a place that I can count on to have a sort of a clean, green attitude to economic activity. And I don't think they're going to differentiate amongst our, you know, every 3 years new elected government. So I think all of us going forward are really risking our international cooperative reputation. I mean, there's been just such a long string of recent failures to cooperate with people we normally are on side with. It was really, I don't know, internationally humiliating for us to, for example, refuse to say anything about the postponement of the new regulations in international shipping. Those were absolutely modest and reasonable and compatible with economic growth, and they brought international shipping into the sort of global effort to reduce emissions for the first time. All of the negotiations were finished, and then all of a sudden, because a few countries were basically bullying everybody else, the new regulations were postponed. If you think about it, it really doesn't make sense to exempt international shipping and aviation, because what that means is, given the fact that there's a limited carbon budget, what that means is all the other sectors have to carry them for free. If you think about it, you know, kerosene for international aviation is untaxed completely. If you're in the European Union and you're flying domestically, you pay a tax on it. If you're in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and you're flying domestically, you pay a tax on it. Soon, European Union and UK countries' international aviation will be taxed. And under regulations that have been withdrawn in the United States, that would have been the case too. But right now, what the case is if you fly to, you know, privately to your third beach house, you pay no tax. But if you feed your child, you know, rice cereal, you pay GST on that. Every other activity, housing and food and local transport, are carrying the load of international aviation, and it's really deeply unfair. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, it looks like if we continue on the current path, more than half of our emissions will be devoted to international aviation. And I think if you ask ordinary people, you know, do I want to pay more for metals and more for food and more for local transport so that I can carry international aviation, I think people might wonder whether that's a good deal. Internationally, they would surely wonder if we get up to, I don't know, a quarter of our carbon budget taken by international aviation. That means that one out of four of our units of emissions aren't going to feed people or house people or move them around locally. They're going to fly people over long haul distances. I don't think this policy status quo is something that most people would agree with if they understood it.
So then, just finally, thinking selfishly in terms of us as a trade partner, in terms of New Zealand's economy and growth, and in terms of what we are paying for to make up for these emissions, what do you expect to kind of see then from the government, and what should we see from the government in terms of the right move?
Well, I think in 2019... we were praised internationally for our incredibly forward-thinking and progressive Zero Carbon Act. And the institutions that went along with it were also in step with the latest thinking on how we can have sort of non-tyrannical, not one-size-fits-all, reasonable policies that will also allow us to avoid the worst climate harm. And those policies included incremental reassessing of our targets with the latest scientific data so that we can always be in step with avoiding disaster. And they included allowing people at the local, especially the national level, to make decisions about how to distribute their basket of fair share of carbon emissions. Part of that institutional framework from 2019 was setting up the Climate Commission, Hepoa Rangi, and allowing these experts with a sort of mission to give us advice on how we can both transition to a low emission economy and continue to flourish. And they have been doing that. And we ought to listen to them. Ignoring our own best source of advice is a huge mistake. And I don't think it's rocket science to do the right thing. What we should do is follow the right course that we set up in 2019 in cross-party agreement. I just think as soon as people understand this complicated policy, they immediately recognize how counterproductive our recent behavior has been. It just doesn't make sense to tax your baby's first carrot and not your third flight to your fourth beach house. That doesn't reflect anybody's settled ideas about how we should live together.
That was Professor of Philosophy at the University of Otago, Lisa Ellis, on New Zealand's shipping and aviation emissions and what our refusal to include them in our targets means for us as we work towards our climate commitments.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.